Good Saturday morning to everybody, and welcome to the Catholic Cemeteries Association radio show, along with the director of Family Services for the CCA, Chris Radlitz. I'm Gary Byron. Chris, good morning there, bud.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Well, you know, I'm not as good as you, that's for sure. I mean, obviously, it's pretty clear that you are not in the studio live with us. Where are you?
I am suffering down in Florida.
Suffering? Did I hear correctly? Suffering.
Oh, yeah.
What are you suffering?
No, actually, we have an annual trade show down in Florida that talks about all good things Catholic and dealing with the association. So once a year, we get together as a group and head down there, and it's great. It gives us an opportunity to try and see what's new in the world, see what things we can bring back to the families of the Archdiocese, and hopefully, continue to build up our ministry and do things well for the church and for the families.
Very nice. Is it busy?
It is very busy. Yeah, there's a lot of folks here, which is great.
Well, I'm sure you're doing a phenomenal job down there. It's got to be. Whereabouts in Florida are you?
We're actually at the Trump National, I think it's called, in Doral.
Doral, yeah. That's where the golfing is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Four beautiful golf courses that I will not get to spend any time on.
Do you play golf, Chris?
I do, but I don't play well. I kind of hack at it. I enjoy it. I think it's a fun game, but quite frankly, I don't have 5 hours that I can devote to spending too much time on a golf course.
Gotcha. Well, I was going to say you're in a better place than I am. That's for sure.
It's good. It's really good, but I'm glad to be here with you.
What's the temperature down there?
It's about 87 right now, but it's humidity's not too bad.
Good.
But the sun is shining.
Nice.
I see a lot of people out on a golf course wishing I was there with them, but I'm not.
Oh, man. Well, it's good to hear your voice, even if I... What was that?
How are you doing?
Well, I try to hang in there every day, one day at a time, you know.
Yep.
It's tough.
I get that. That's what we have to do.
It's tough. You know what it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I figured this morning we would talk about maybe the sacramentals. I know a couple of weeks ago we talked about relics and the role that they play in the Catholic religion today. And it occurred to me that there was a tangent subject that we could explore. And that is the sacramentals, if you don't mind. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you can start off with something pretty simple. Maybe, and that's perhaps defining what a sacramental is.
Well, it's interesting. The sacramentals, there's really two types of sacramentals. There are those that we call things, and there's the things that we call action. So what sacramentals in general mean, they are holy reminders for us. These are things that are blessed in nature, and usually there are ceremonies that are associated with these objects when they're blessed, but they are things that we either wear or do that help remind us on a constant basis that, we were made in the image and likeness of God. And there's a variety of different types of sacramentals. When we talk, I said that there was really two types that were things and actions. So when we talk about the things, I think the most common one that people are familiar with are medals.
Sure.
So we have many types of medals within the faith, the miraculous medal. There's different medals of all the different saints. St. Christopher, one of the most popular, who is the, the patron saint of all drivers and travelers. Medal of Saint Benedict, which is very big because it is one that is known to keep, it's kind of known in the faith as the devil chasing medal. It keeps the devil away from us if we try and live a decent life and we keep ourselves in a state of grace, then that helps keep anything that the devil wants to throw at us, away from us.
Mm-hmm.
St. Michael, of course, which is a big protector. There's so many of them. I mean, there's literally thousands and thousands of different types of medals that have been created to honor different saints, to honor different times in people's lives, etc. And then the other side of it is there are actions. The most simple action that we would look at the sacramental is a blessing. It's usually a ceremony of some sort where a priest places a thing or person under the care of God. And it's usually a prescribed formula of some sort that's given by the priest. I think the Church of Rituals, there's over 200 different types of blessings. I think that the simplest is the sign of the cross. Sometimes we just bless ourselves in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. That's a sacramental action. That's a blessing that we do for ourselves. Sometimes we dip our fingers in holy water when we enter into the church, and we do the sign of the cross that way. But there's a whole book of apostolic blessings that was actually put together by the Apostolic See recently, actually in 1989. And it pretty much has blessings for every occasion. One of the more...
Yeah, I was going to say, what are the more, maybe more famous ones, I guess?
I'm sorry?
What are some of the more famous ones?
Oh.
More well-known, maybe is a better way for me to ask.
One of the most famous is, you know, that we're coming up to October 4th. October 4th is the Feast of St. Francis. And one of the most famous is the blessing of animals. Usually during the weekend mass, either directly before or directly after the Feast of St. Francis, because he's considered a patron saint of animals, there is a blessing of pets and animals. So families bring their pets to church, and there's a blessing that takes place. That's kind of probably one of the most famous, you know. Then you also have some of the sacraments themselves, confirmation, which is also a particular type of blessing. There are holy oils that are part of the sacramentals that are used within that blessing. Mm-hmm. Same with the sacrament of the sick, same with baptism. So a lot of the sacraments themselves are considered sacramentals by nature of the actions and the rituals that take place. One of the more uncommon ones, but well known, is exorcism. In a few short words, exorcism is a prayer in which the priest, who has to be an exorcist-trained priest, commands the devil to leave a person. It forbids him to harm anyone. So you have these evil spirits that are running around all the time, you know, trying to do spiritual harm to people, and exorcism is one form of a sacramental blessing that helps rid people of that demon or that type of thing bothering them.
So an exorcism is not just a movie. I mean, it's a real thing. Exorcisms are real. It's not just some myth or movie.
There is nothing phony about an actual exorcism. You know, you and I off the air have had a number of conversations about, you know, different things. I can't go into too much detail, but I've been part of a team for many years doing something similar to exorcisms. They're not as far, because only a highly trained exorcist priest can actually conduct an exorcism. But I've been involved in other things with minor demons to help people try and, you know, get rid of them. And it's a process, all these things. Have you ever seen the movie, The Exorcist?
I did I know the movie came out in the 70s. I was too young then. I think I saw it sometime in the mid-80s.
Yeah. Yeah. So all the things that happened to Linda Blair in that, I have experienced, except for the head turning 365 degrees around.
What do you mean you experienced? You had an exorcism?
No, but I have been I have been involved in a ministry that does deliverances, which is one step short of an exorcism.
Oh, wow.
And it is something that is amazing to see. I can't go into too much more detail on that, but that's why I asked if you saw the movie, because all those things actually happen. It actually exists. It's really quite wild.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
When we talk about different blessings, it's really exorcism is a major one. Some of the other actions that we take place are genuflection, simply kneeling down, you know, bending the right knee, standing back. It's an act of reverence, usually before the Blessed Sacrament. Sometimes when we enter into a church, you know, we will get some holy water, bless ourselves, take a knee, you know, get back up, especially since we know that within the church is the true presence of Christ in the Eucharist. Sometimes during the Mass, there are times we're asked to bow, and that's another form of a sacramental action. So there's a lot. And it's a beautiful way of actually reminding us, as I said, holy reminders. It's a way of reminding us who we are, made in the image of likeness of God, and that we do have a real part of us that is not only our human part, but also our spiritual part.
Why has there been so much controversy regarding the authenticity of the shroud?
Oh, the Shroud of Turin?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. Well, if you talk about sacramentals, the Shroud of Turin is probably one of, if not the most famous sacramentals that exist in the Catholic Church today. I don't know how much you know about it, but the Shroud of Turin, it's a rectangular piece of cloth. It measures roughly 14 and a half feet by 4 feet wide, 14 feet long, 4 feet wide. And it's called the Shroud of Turin because it has been kept in the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist in Turin, Italy, since 1578. In many cases, just known as the Holy Shroud. And the reason that it's considered such an interesting and famous sacramental is that that is the shroud that was considered to be the burial cloth of Jesus himself. And when Christ was raised from the dead, all that was left was the burial cloth. And when they took the burial cloth and unfolded it, there was an image emblazoned in that cloth of a bearded crucified man with bloodstains that matched the wounds suffered by Jesus, as recorded in all four gospel narratives. So since 1578, the Shroud has resided in Turin, Italy, thus is the name the Shroud of Turin.
Mm-hmm.
It's housed in the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist, and millions of Christians from all denominations believe that the shroud is the authentic burial cloth used to wrap Jesus after his death on the cross. And it was found by his disciples in the empty tomb after the resurrection. And I think that the shroud's most distinctive characteristics trigger some of the most frequently asked and, quite frankly, still unanswered questions today. What caused a front-to-back linear mirror image of an adult male to be formed on a linen burial cloth? And the fact is that it has been analyzed so many times, and science has yet to be able to produce a definitive answer that explains why the Shroud of Turin is still the most studied and analyzed, revered, and controversial artifact in the world. But to get to the point as to why it's so controversial, the image is purely superficial. It does not penetrate the cloth. It actually rests on the top two microfibers of the cloth itself. It defies all scientific testing. I mean, no one has ever been able to understand how. And then remember, we're in an age where we've got some pretty sophisticated testing that we can do. No one can explain how it is that this image exists, but it is not penetrating the cloth. It literally hovers above the top two microfibers of the cloth. So it has defied all scientific testing of this cloth, of fiber, or blood.
Has it remained intact over the years?
It has. And the image is basically, it's almost like a photographic negative that develops as a positive. So one of the other interesting things is about it, it contains a 3D topographical map almost of the image itself. So it's like there's distance information that's encoded. It's got the height and the width and the depths of the different wounds. There's no directionality of the image, so that if you were to have tried to paint that with a brush or some kind of a substance application tool, there would be some directionality of how the stroke went, okay? There's none of that. It's just there. There's no variation in the depth of the image itself, which is virtually impossible to do with human hands, simply because when we paint something, our natural tendency is to press a little harder as we're stroking downward, for instance.
Right, right.
A little lighter as we're stroking upward. There is literally zero variation in the depth of this image across the entire cloth. The yellowing of the image is absolutely uniform in its intensity because it's kind of a yellow image on the cloth, and it is exactly uniform everywhere. There's no difference in intensity whatsoever, which is impossible over so many years for it to maintain that same intensity. There's no outline. There's no defined edges of the image whatsoever. It just kind of sits and floats there. So the conclusion that's been reached after so much chemical and physical testing has been done is that there is no chemical or physical method known that could possibly account for the totality of this type of image, nor in any combination of physical, chemical, biological, or medical circumstances explain how that image exists. So
it's incredible.
And you know, one of the most interesting things is one of the most famous people in the world who knew how to really study these things was a lifelong Jewish individual who was brought in. And when he finished, he ended up converting to Catholicism.
Yeah, I'll bet he did.
Yeah, because it was so striking that something like this could actually exist. There's actually been a movie done about him. I don't remember what the name of it is. But it's phenomenal. So, yeah, if you're ever in Italy and you can ever find yourself in Turin, you should try and go and see the Shroud because it's really something. It's not always there. It's not always open for people to see. But there's times of the year that they will actually bring it out and, you know, people will get to see it. I mean, you can't touch it or anything. It's behind glass and steel and everything else, but it's really something. So that's, wow. Yeah, it's just a phenomenal tool. It's just an amazing sacrament.
It's perhaps the most amazing sacrament.
I think it is. Yeah. Again, because it defies all possible logic.
Yeah.
There's just no way something like that could be manufactured, especially back in the 13, 1400s when it was brought to Turin.
And remain intact all these years. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Folks, you are listening to the...
They've taken tiny little pieces of cloth, you know, that they've cut from it. I mean, very small.
Yeah.
Because they don't want anything to happen. But they've done it two or three times where they've taken the actual pieces of cloth and tried to analyze the cloth. And it is most definitely cloth from that time frame.
Right.
There's no getting around it. You know, not like it's something that can't be analyzed. You can figure out where the cloth came from because of its age.
Of course.
It's got markers. It's amazing.
Folks, you're listening to the Catholic Cemeteries Association radio show. You can... find them online at www.ccacem.org. We're, of course, as always, talking with the Director of Family Services for the CCA, Chris Radlitz. I'm Gary Byron. What is maybe another sacramental that we can share with the audience that is popular? I'm sure there's several of them that we're missing. I'm looking at the popular ones.
I think one of the most popular ones that we see or hear about today is the tilma of St. Juan Diego, which carries the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And there's a great story behind it. The story behind the tilma, which right now is a very important part of the Basilica in Mexico, takes place back in 1531. A man named Juan Diego, who was a Native American who had been converted to Catholicism, met a woman on the way to Mass. She was dressed as an Aztec princess, and she told him that she was Mary, Mother of Jesus. She also told him that she wanted a church built to her on that spot. So he went to the bishop, The bishop didn't believe him, and he said, if that's true, then I need a sign. And he asked for a sign. So Juan Diego had to go back home. Well, when he came home, one of the things that he found was that his uncle was extremely sick, and he was very concerned about it. So the next Sunday, he walked and quickly went around the spot that he had seen Mary because he was afraid she would slow him down. And his uncle was so sick, and he wanted to get help as soon as possible, so he was going to the priest. However, she met him anyway and told him that his uncle was fine and to go and ask the bishop again. So he faithfully said, okay, and he did this, and the bishop refused him again, asking for a sign. However, when he went home, his uncle was completely healed and fine. So then the next week, Juan Diego goes directly to that spot, and the lady met him again and said to her that the bishop requires proof. So she sent him to gather roses. Now, it was in the middle of winter. Then miraculously, there on the mountain were roses. But he gathered them all up. He put them in his tilma, which is the over, kind of like a poncho that he was wearing. He wrapped these roses in the tilma, and off he went with instructions to show them to the bishop. So he goes to the bishop again with his case. And again, the bishop refused to listen without a sign. So then Juan Diego let the roses fall out of the tilma. And when, first off, the miraculous part was that there was roses in the middle of winter. And the second was that when he opened up his tilma, there was an image of Mary as Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Oh.
And at that point, the archbishop immediately agreed to build the church. And Juan Diego ended up being the, I guess, what you call the sextant for it for the rest of his life. And he was the person that took care of that church for the rest of his life. And the tilma was displayed there, and that's the beginning of where the basilica came, Basilica of St. John, or not St. John, but the Basilica of Mexico came from. And the tilma is still on display there. Go ahead.
No. Is that the significance, the religious significance of the tilma?
Well, the basilica that the tilma is housed in is an important symbol of faith in the Americas, especially in Mexico. It's a Roman Catholic church, and that means it is honored by the Pope. And basilica is a title that's granted to relatively few churches. It's usually granted for its religious significance. So the tilma is a symbol of indigenous rights, as Our Lady of Guadalupe has dark skin, as dressed as an Aztec princess, rather than wearing Spanish clothing and having light skin like many religious icons.
Mm-hmm.
Because of its use as a symbol of this, many people have tried to destroy it. Once a factory worker placed a bomb near it, and the bomb shattered all the windows and destroyed part of the building. It even melted a nearby brass crucifix, yet the tilma remained unharmed.
Wow. That's wild. That's wild.
Some consider this very symbolic. Jesus was destroyed on the cross and protecting his mother. And because of this general symbolism behind the tilma, it has become a very popular icon. Because of the miracle associated with it, it has become a subject, again, of much skepticism and research. Textile experts, upon examination, are surprised because the cloth has not disintegrated even after all of the humidity, the dust, the heat, the bomb exploding. It just doesn't disintegrate. There have been replicas made from similar material that were placed in glass cases where they only lasted 8 years, although the original has lasted centuries in open air. Parts of the image appear to be painted in one stroke without paintbrush marks or sketches. After the image of the eye of the icon was enlarged,
mm-hmm.
there is an image of Franciscans and Native Americans holding hands. Some other studies show that in the other eye, there's actually the reflection of the bishop seeing the roses on the floor. So it's one of these things that cannot be explained. The science cannot explain how it could possibly not have deteriorated.
Mm-hmm.
There's no technology that could have existed back in the 1500s that could have created these reflections in the eyes. So it's really quite an icon of religious significance, not only to the people of Mexico, but the Catholics throughout the world. And if you look, especially now, faith and devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe has never wavered. It has just grown substantially.
That's incredible. We're nearly at the end of our show here. Maybe if you could take I only have 1 minute regarding some of the DOLs coming up. I know there's one coming up. I believe it's Thursday, September 30th.
September 30th at Saints Isidore and Maria Parish in Glastonbury.
Oh yeah.
So there's one at 2 o'clock and one at 6 p.m. And as we're coming into October soon, you should just check our website, www.ccacem.org, and you'll see all the different ones that are scheduled for October also. And we really encourage people to call and make reservations, because we're still keeping it somewhat limited in scope as to how large a group we have.
Gotcha. So then let me go over some of the particulars then. As you've already mentioned, you can check out the Catholic Cemeteries Association website, which is www.ccacem.org. Once again, it's ccacem.org. By the way, folks, if you've got a question, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to get your question answered on these very airwaves, as a matter of fact. Simply email us at the show here at ccawdrc@gmail.com. It's that easy. ccawdrc@gmail.com. Incidentally, the Catholic Cemeteries Association has their own toll-free phone number. Write this down as well. It is 1-800-505-0050. Again, it's toll-free, 800-505-0050. So you want to just make note of that. So for Chris Radlitz, the Director of Family Services of the CCA, I'm Gary Byron. Thank you so much for listening to the Catholic Cemeteries Association radio show. Until next Saturday morning, my friends, have a good one, everybody. So long.